And we're back in the big show. Mike Gross and Gordy Jones hanging with you on After the Buzzer. And it's basketball season. And we have a basketball guy as our guest tonight. He is Mike Jensen, who recently ended a long run at the Philadelphia Inquirer, covering primarily known for college sports, primarily for college basketball. He's going to write a book about Philly hoops, which we'll talk about, and we'll get into a little bit about coming to the end of a long run in a sort of conventional sports writing, if that's the right word, career, with Mike Jensen. Welcome back to After the Buzzer.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Gordy. Yeah. The title of your podcast feels appropriate to me.
There you go, right. Especially now, right?
It really does. So are you hitting withdrawal yet? I don't mean so much. You're a grinder. You go to the gyms and talk to people, and that's how you've filled your days for so long. Is that, you know, going away a little bit?
Not at all. Yeah. Zero. I mean, going to games, do I feel like there were awesome Big Five games last night? I watched them at home. I watched one on the television, one on my phone. Mm-hmm. Watch them both at the same time, so I'm not. But as far as feeling to be there, really, the next thing I'm doing, I've already begun. Yeah. I don't think I'm being delusional that I'll be busier in 2024 than I was in 2023.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah. And just tell us a little bit about what you see the book becoming. It's about Philly, about college basketball in Philly, right?
No, it's about Philly hoops.
Oh, and okay. Okay. Here, yeah.
The subject is what the city and region have given the sport. What's the impact Philadelphia? So, in other words, there has to be a Wilt chapter. And I have an idea of what the Wilt chapter needs to say. Mm-hmm. Like starting, for instance, Wilt Chamberlain, I don't like the best player arguments, whether it's Wilt, Jordan, LeBron, you know, whoever. I think it's a bogus argument. But if you want to talk about the most dominant player in the history of basketball, if you say anybody but Wilt, you know, you'll get an argument from me that I'll win. and for Kobe, again, best, whatever, but I was able to witness some things that told me that Kobe Bryant's the most popular player in the history of the sport for one huge reason. He came along at the time that Asia got interested in the sport.
That's true.
And Asia loved Kobe, and I covered the Beijing Olympics and saw it firsthand. He was the most popular athlete at the Beijing Olympics. Mm-hmm. And so I'm doing that. And then, you know, Paul Arizin's jump shot and women's basketball, why did it really have its roots in Philadelphia? I can bring that to life. So I'm excited to, I'm not going to try to be comprehensive. This is not going to be an encyclopedia. Mm-hmm. And it can't just be rah-rah Philly. I'll have one chapter that calls it grievances. I couldn't get a quote from Sonny Vaccaro in the Inquirer in the late 90s when he told me Philadelphia is the most fucked up city in America when it comes to basketball, youth basketball. But
really?
I can now and explain it.
So what did he mean by that? Why?
Yeah, what did he mean by that? I'm interested in that, yeah.
Sure, it was so scattered and divided, so if you were Nike or Adidas, it was like, who the heck do you deal with?
Because
really what happened was, Sonny Hill had it all, but then Sonny Hill decided that, hey, the Sonny Hill League is perfect, and it was for, you know, a number of generations. Our players don't need to travel. We have everything we need here. Yeah. And he was right until he was wrong. And until, you know, they said, no, the players were like, we're going to Vegas. What are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And, you know, et cetera. And then everyone came up around him. Mm-hmm. And even to this day, there's just so many factions. So, well, I think that's good for opportunities. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as good for Nike or Adidas. Because they didn't have all the players, you know, that sort of thing. in the end, does that matter? You know, they end up wanting Kobe and LeBron anyway, and then Nike got whoever they wanted. And,
yeah,
interesting.
But that's where that comes from. But the women's side is really just fascinating. Man, I covered a Final Four with, you know, Gino Muffet, Dawn were three of the four coaches. That was another UConn wins year. But you know, Philly suburbs, North Philly. Coaches.
I can't think of anybody who is as good a coach as Staley is, who was as good a player as Staley is. I can think of some that were better players, but not coach. Some that were better coach, maybe arguably better coach, but not player. She has a unique niche, I think.
I'm with you. I think you have to switch sports entirely. You have to go to like Dan Gable wrestling.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah,
you know, but I'm trying to think. But you go through the four. You know, try to come up with a football coach player.
It's a good discussion. It's a real good discussion.
Despite being Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year, apparently Deion Sanders.
Oh my God! Don't get me started.
we'll leave that right hanging out there.
Leave it hanging there.
So, what are some of the other grievances you're going to cover?
The grievances, I've got to figure them out. Some of it, and this isn't a grievance, this is a celebration of the craziness of Philadelphia basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it's the craziness of Philadelphia, obviously.
Right.
And what the obstacles were to get to. So I do have to go back. I mean, I talked to a man named T. Parham 2 days ago for over an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And the first team all public team his senior year at Northeast High School was Will Chamberlain was the center, Raging Scott, who ended up being an NBA Coach of the Year for Detroit Pistons, power forward.
He's recently wrote a book about it.
Yeah, good book. Mm-hmm. Good book. I read it. And he's on my interview list. T. Parham scoring 22 points a game as a 5'8 guy, and just him explaining what it was like to be a 5'8 black player then, and sort of that it was basically World War II, no one would even pick him in the schoolyard.
Wow.
But all of a sudden, soldiers were gone, and they needed, hey, kid. It was literally that. And then first baseball, and then basketball, and then, you know, going through the quotas where, nobody today, somebody who was first team all public would have, they'd find a way to get you an SAT score or get you to a prep school. There, he had nothing, and even the Warriors were interested in him, but as he said, they had three black players coming along, and Wilt was coming right on top of them as the fourth.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't going to happen. John Chaney lived all that, publicly player of the year. Bethune Cookman, Eastern League,
that's right, yeah. Wasn't Hal Lear was in that boat too, wasn't he?
Yeah, right. You got sniffs in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But the point, like T said, like, you had to be a star.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't sitting on the bench as a black player. Now, he believed himself that, Wilt said, if I get Claude Gross and T. Parham, we can beat the Celtics. You know, he already had gold eras. He had great players around him. He's just saying, let's have the true best of Philly, including those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Arizin's jump shot, huge. You know, not the first jump shot. One guy wrote about the eight possible first jump shots.
Really? I thought it was Joe Folks. Wasn't it supposed to be him?
Let me see if I can find it.
That's really interesting to me.
it's really interesting, and I think Folks is on that list. But I expected Arizin to be on that list, and he wasn't.
He wasn't.
But here's my argument: is I think he's the first jump shooter that the shot is recognizable today and carried through today's game. But Herb McGee said he modeled his jump shot after Paul Arizin.
Well, that's pretty good authority.
And then Herb McGee taught, you know, Philadelphia how to shoot. and anyone who would buy his tape was allowed to buy it in any country they wanted.
thinking about the idea for your book, so many things have crossed in my mind. Herb McGee was actually one of them. Lionel Simmons was another one. But here, let me tell you something I just thought of. And you were probably at this game, Mike. It was Penn State and Michigan State a couple years ago at the Palestra. And Michigan State, Penn State won the game. And Tom Izzo, after the game, was really mad and frustrated and disgusted with the way his team was played. And he apologized to the Palestra for his team's performance.
As one will.
He apologized to a building. So I guess that's my way of introducing the Palestra as part of, I imagine, part of your book.
It has to be. And by the way, in a column that night I wrote, Reese later for comment, the Palestra accepted the apology.
That's good.
For
I like
Izzo,
that.
It would.
That's nice.
But I've got to figure out what translated out from the Palestra. And it did. I mean, here was this first modern place for decades. It had more NCAA games than anybody, obviously the doubleheaders. But I don't, I don't just want it to be rah-rah. But there was something there.
Yeah.
And it still is significant for instance, every league has a coach from Philly. Well, and half of them are from the Philly suburbs. But their dad was from Southwest Philly, and they were in those doubleheaders. You know, they were weaned on that. You know, the University of Sciences coach Dave Pauly for years said he had his own personal usher's jacket, and he was not an usher. He just he was a student of basketball, and he was walking in and palm the shirt and sit in the corner.
That's
and catch every doubleheader.
That's
nice. You know, it was a laboratory of sorts, and obviously you had. You know, Chuck Daly and Dick Harter and Raleigh and Paul Westhead. I mean, so you're right. All those, you know, Jack Ramsey dudes.
I just start thinking about the names. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's kind of crazy for sure. I mean, I talked to a guy and talked for an hour with a man named Bob Morris. Was part of the great.
Remember
Penn
that Penn? Yeah.
Yeah. And fascinating. I ended up, somebody else said, Bob Morris in town, we should get together for breakfast. I was like, I knew one chapter of this book had to be how the American game went to Europe. Mm-hmm. And Bob Morris might be the best example of that.
Okay.
He explained to me that his senior year, they played second round of the NCAA tournament. They played North Carolina in Morgantown, West Virginia. And he was a 6'8 guy who was way ahead of his time and could shoot outside, Bob Morris.
Mm.
Guarding a guy named Bob McAdoo, who was 6'9", and
he could shoot outside.
Time, could shoot outside.
Yeah.
Well, Jack Ramsey drafted both those guys.
That's funny.
McAdoo in the first round,
and
Bob Morris in the third round. But Bob Morris, whose father had been a librarian at Temple for 20 years, he lived down in Chester County. He's got like a His whole story was like out of Hoosiers, not out of Philly Hoops, because he like first basket was on the side of the shed on their farm.
Yeah.
I said, "What was the surface?" He said, "Oh, it was just grass." And I convinced my parents that I could put a rim inside that shed, and it was just enough for 15 feet, and you could get it just high enough, and he would shoot forever. I was like, "Okay." And then Digger saw him, primitive recruiting, and Digger agreed with any coach who was sitting next to him. We said, that kid should be inside. Digger was like, right. The Digger got it for Penn. You know, Digger.
That's funny.
Had to figure it out. So anyway, but this guy ended up, instead of going third round, he realized I could sit on the bench watching Bob McAdoo take jumpers in Buffalo, New York, 1 year contract, NBA minimum. The Italian champion team was the European champion team, Vincenzo, up in the north, close to between Milan and the Swiss border, and it was 80,000 people, but it was basketball crazy city. They offered him a 2-year contract, a car, an apartment, guaranteed more money than the NBA.
Right.
He took it and never came back, and he's one of the, I don't know if they had a top 50 or top 75 best European players ever. They played for the European Championship every year for 9 straight years and won their share against, like, you know, Red Army Moscow, Real Madrid.
Wow.
So
that's a great story. I love that.
And they were talking, and he was talking about some coach who was a Delaware coach and then went over there, Dan Peterson. I don't know if you remember that name at all, but he was European coach for years. I didn't remember, because this was early 70s. He was actually the Delaware coach who did not recruit Bob Morse 12 miles away, who was dating a Delaware co-ed. But he ended up coaching against Bob Morse. He said he was the best player I ever coached against in Europe. And he also said these guys were, like, there was no NBA on television. These guys were the NBA coming to Europe. Now, of course, it's the other way. They took every lesson they could, watch every NBA game anyway, and now, you know, play a beautiful version of the game and have come to dominate the game.
That's what I always think, Mike. I always think that we exported the game and they kind of made it better and we brought it back, you know, in, you know, the best manifestation being the Warriors, but it's sort of how it's gone, I think.
Yeah, I do too.
Boy, you're really going to have to screw this up, Mike. This is such a good topic that there's so much meat on this bone.
There's almost too much to, you're really going to have to, like, whittling it down is going to be the challenge, I would think.
I'm going to have to explain to people that this is not going to be an encyclopedia. I want to tell stories and hopefully by the end of those stories, you know, we've got a sense of what's going on here.
Mike, I'm talking a little bit of a big picture. I have a big picture question about college basketball because to me, it's a less appealing game than it's been for a long time. And I think the main reason why is that the players don't stay in college as long as they used to. I mean, that was the allowing them to move on was the right thing to do, but not the right thing in my view for us, for people who just didn't like basketball. So, do you agree with that? Do you think it's a lesser game now? And also, in terms of the personalities involved, how people can connect to personalities, I think that has been somewhat lost. What's your sense
players
of...
Players or coaches, are you saying, Mike?
What's that?
On the personalities, do you mean players or coaches?
Player, both. I mean both, but mostly coaches. Yeah. I would say for personality.
I feel like it's been that way for 20 years.
Yeah, it's not new.
Watered down product that, you know, Grant Hill isn't staying for 4 years. I mean, how many years did Shaq play college basketball? Never would have sniffed a college basketball.
Yeah. I think it was two or three?
Sniff a classroom. I have no idea. So that's been gone. I'll flip it the other way, that at least NIL may keep them in a little bit longer. And I don't mean the stars. They should go. When you're being offered, guaranteed, you know, if you're a lottery pick, you have to go.
You know,
never mind insurance policies. But that next level guy. And so, for instance, Justin Moore, really good guard at Villanova this year. I believe there's a 0% chance he'd be in college basketball this year without NIL. Everyone can hate NIL. But it offers way more than G League money, and which means it's more than two-way contract money, probably. That's not a terrible thing. That it could, the level, you know, there are things that are going to be bad, transfer portal, instant free agency, and all that. That's part of this landscape too. But women's college basketball, there are more recognizable people.
Exactly. That's the barometer, I think. Yep.
Because there's no money in the NBA. So now there's more money. Caitlin Clark, we see her in our Allstate commercial, and she should be.
She's
still recognizable. Yep. She's more recognizable than all but how many WNBA players. I mean, you know, you can tick off Asia Wilson and Breonna Stewart, but you can't tick off too many because you get to Caitlin Clark.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been part of the deal. Personalities, I think it is too. Now there's so much money in it, and everyone's, I mean, you know, when's, there are no John Cheney's anymore.
Speaking of chapters in your book.
Yeah.
yeah, there's, yeah, Yeah, there's less crazy. I mean, yeah. you're right. I mean, we were completely spoiled in Philly. I mean, at one point, Dan Wetzel, he might have been CBS at this point. Dan's the best. He wrote a column on, like, the five funniest coaches in college basketball. And this was back, you know, and he had Gene Cady. He might even have Bobby Knight. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But he had guys, and I'm like, shit, we have five funnier guys than that in Philly. You know, Janie Martelli, Bruiser Flint. I could tick off two D2 coaches that are way funnier than you.
Well, yeah, right. Which begs the question: what was the maddest that John Chaney ever was at you?
At me, he was shouting through the wall. I'll start that. The first time I ever encountered him being mad, like he had the best director of basketball operations in the history of director of basketball operations, guys. John DeSantis,
right, remember him,
producer,
yeah. Sure.
At Comcast, ever since. But once a season, John would call him, Mike, you got a century for Coach Chaney? And I'm like, I don't think he's going to compliment me on my adjective here. And I made the mistake the first time I got that call, and I can remember it was in my kitchen. It was you know, in the 90s. I wasn't even on the Temple beat yet at that point. So I was in my kitchen, and he started in. I had said Temple in the Atlantic 10 was in a second tier league, and John just couldn't abide. I didn't say Temple was a second tier program. I sort of, when I say I made a mistake, I argued back. I didn't say he was wrong, but I explained why he was wrong, and he just got fume, because at that point, Chaney was doing his thing, Calipari was doing his thing, I can remember saying, John, there are more than two tiers, there are a whole bunch of tiers, and he still was not having it. Atlantic 10 was first tier, and when we got off the phone, I'm fairly sure he hung up, and he had the commissioner of the Atlantic 10 and Speedy Morris write letters to the sports editor.
Before
saying what an idiot Mike Jensen was.
Wow.
So, but I learned all John wanted, and I wrote about this when he died, all he wanted to do was get all this off his chest. And by the end of it, after he'd MF'd you a certain number of double-digit times,
it's a key stat.
By the end.
A key stat.
Like, you just hold the phone a bit away. So the maddest he ever got at me, where the reason I know, I couldn't hear him in the next room, but one of their radio guys was in the next room and could hear the whole conversation from John's end of things. He was mad, and I actually had written something that I thought John would agree with about the succession plan at Temple, mm-hmm. his successor.
Right.
He did not agree with that. and this is to his credit, a lot of things are to his credit. I mean, it's great covering him, but he took me through his thought process. He explained why he had to do certain things publicly and certain things privately, and what was going on and why, mm-hmm. and how Peter Liakouros, the president, was doing these things that, I mean, John and Liakouros were really close, but on this front, he explained to me what was going on. So by the end, I did understand. I didn't care. I'd written a column about who I thought should be the next basketball coach at Temple. But I respected that John had enough for respect for me that he screamed at me for half an hour.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. That's a piece of it, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about right now. The Big Five, it seems like it's decent top to bottom right now. St. Joe's is okay. LaSalle is okay. They're having this tournament, which has been very competitive right now. What's the current state of the Big Five, Mike?
Well, it couldn't have gone any lower, you could argue, right? Last time was the first time since the field went to 64 teams that nobody from Philadelphia made it. Nobody from the Big Five made the NCAA tournament last year. And even before in recent years, Villanova's been there. You know, just has been propping up the Big Five, right?
Yeah.
And the others have struggled. We know that. There have been coaching changes all over the place. We know the history of it. So this year, at least this tournament format, for one, you're right that St. Joe's after really tough years, Billy Lang starting basically from scratch. He's got a good ball club, clearly. I mean, you go to Rupp and you take Kentucky to overtime, young Kentucky team, and he's got best guards and good young players at St. Joe's. They took him to overtime, had a 1-point lead last minute, and then they took out Villanova. I mean, they screwed it up by losing to Texas A&M Commerce, which, I know Texas A&M Commerce is an institution of higher learning that has a basketball team. Yeah. I did not until that game. And they lost to them. And they were like, so, you know, it's a tough path to, you know, are they NCAA contender? But now they're a legit good basketball team. They have, they played with their center last night who had a toe sprain, but Eric Reynolds is an NBA prospect as a junior guard. Lynn Greer, the third, is playing good basketball.
Yep.
X Brown, another Roman Catholic point guard, just terrific. He plays a fast, fast, fast game, but he still plays smart, smart, smart. I was at their opener, and literally he comes into the game, and the first thing he does in his college basketball career was tip a pass for a steal.
A deflection. Like,
Here we go. St. Joe's. LaSalle, a Fran Dunphy team with veteran guards, good guards. Brickus had 41 last night before fouling out.
That's the guy from Coatesville. Remember him, Gordy? The little guy from Coatesville? Yeah.
That's the guy from Coatesville.
Yep.
I tweeted today that if the NBA didn't allow anybody over 6 feet,
That's hilarious.
He can play ball.
Yeah, he can play.
So they're better. They were picked last in the A-10. It's like a Fran Dunphy team with two good guards, Brickus and Brantley, is not going to come in last in the A-10. I don't know who is, but it ain't going to be them. So they're fine. Adam Fisher, you guys, you know, as a Penn State assistant, a Beacon assistant, you know, Larinaga before then, you know, was a assistant video coordinator at Villanova way back in the day, but Bucks County guy. He by all appearances, optimized what he could get in the transfer portal. And they're playing ball together. It's sort of like, who are these guys? And I don't know how, you know, maybe there's not a connection to those guys yet. They have a couple starters back, Miller and White, so those are the connections for fans, except Temple basketball fans. Who have been through lean years lately, and see they're playing together. So whatever it turns out to be in the AAC, which is a tough basketball league, you're going to go to Tulsa, you're going to go to Wichita, and there'll be some tough nights. But they're playing for a Big Five championship Saturday against St. Joe's, and that's a pretty good start for things for Adam.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I'm kind of impressed with what they've done. The group, I mean, what they've done so far.
Pretty good.
I thought Texas A&M Commerce would have a cooler nickname than the Lions. I just looked it up. and secondly, Shaq played 3 years at LSU for what it's worth.
I would have guessed that. Yeah.
So, hey, the other day you tweeted out that somebody gave you this quote, John Chaney is still mad at me to this day, and he's dead. Who said that to you?
The man T-Param, who was when I was talking about quotas and things like that.
Right.
T ended up being a referee, and John was a Baker League coach, and when he didn't have enough guys who showed up for games in the summer, he would play. And T fouled him out like before halftime, and he's like, "You know all my stuff. That's a problem." So John was furious, and T as a quintessential Philadelphia guy, just like that, you know.
Yeah, of course. Like,
he was a guy. T was a guy who could tell me because Guy Rogers had been just ahead of him in Northeast Highs. He could explain Guy Rogers, ball handling wizard. Best there ever was. When you made a cut, you just got the ball. But here's what I'm getting at. You would also say, just couldn't shoot. Tried to get him, show him his left hand was just too heavy. He was too. It's like, so he was telling real things about Wilt and about Guy Rogers, not just like that they're the best ever, but
yeah, right.
Here was a flaw. Here was the flaw in the ointment.
Well, speaking of referees, don't you have to do something about referees given the number that have come from Philly, like the Joey Crawfords and even the Tim Donahue's, right?
Oh, God.
You said the sentence perfectly. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, there's a high school in Delaware County where Fran freaking O'Hanlon is the varsity basketball coach at Cardinal O'Hara this year in Springfield. Like,
I forgot about that. Yeah,
I
did too.
I live 8 minutes. He was going to be the JV coach. He wanted to be the JV coach because he didn't want to recruit. But then something happened to the varsity coach. He's like, all right, I'll do the varsity. And, you know, here's a guy who could coach anywhere. He could coach Oklahoma.
Right.
He's coaching O'Hara. But Joey Crawford and Tim Donahue and, you know, a whole bunch.
There's a bunch,
Others were, there was that O'Hara mafia, still Eddie Malloy.
Eddie Malloy was the one I was going to mention, yeah. A great player for Herb McGee at one point.
You started at St. Joe's. Transferred to a really, really good textile team.
Where Pat Chambers was on that team.
At that point.
Yeah,
that's
Pat.
Right.
So
Pat was the point guard, and now I wrote about the point guard at Textile, the point guard at Penn, the Chambers brothers. I remember writing that story back in the day, way back in the day.
So Mike, I was talking a couple weeks ago with one of my Penn State colleagues who's actually, as hard as this is to believe, he's older than I am, and we were talking about.
There are a couple there.
We were talking about the old days, the way newspapers used to be, and he said, the way I look at it, we were lucky that we got to have our run when newspapers mattered.
Correct.
And of course, I knew exactly what he meant, and so do you, I'm sure. But
I didn't have the same conversation with the same guy. That's possible. Yeah. I 1,000% feel that way. I feel blessed. I feel, you know, I think we all have the same anxiety for our younger colleagues, you know, about how, not just can they get to the finish line, because, I mean, it's been a tough business for a long time. But, in Philadelphia particularly, I mean, you cover college hoops, and, like, if you're going to cover the University of Florida, you're going to cover them 12 months a year, like pro team. In Philly, it's a pro town. I ended up covering soccer in 10 countries on 5 continents in the summertime.
Is that right?
Wow. Smarty Jones and Barbaro and Fleet Alex just thrown into things off seasons. And it's all hands on deck when it was, you know, the Phillies or the Eagles or the Sixers were going on a run. Even if the Flyers were going on a run, they were smart enough not to ask me exactly.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
I mean, that's a tribe. The people that cover that sport are a tribe unto themselves. I'm convinced of it.
it's a foreign language. I mean, soccer's a foreign language that I learned.
Right.
Horse racing's a foreign language that I learned. And it's fun to learn it, but you have to that has to be your first language, not just a second language on the side.
Agreed. So is there going to be a Sixers element to this book, or are you just sticking to the colleges?
It's not the colleges, it's the city itself.
Right.
So there has to be a Sixers element. I mean, you can't write about what the city has given the sport without mentioning Doc and Moses and you know, going through, right through Charles and AI to present day Embiid. So, but, you know, I haven't figured out what I can tell people that they don't know and how I can approach that. And maybe, hopefully, I'll talk to enough smart people in the next year, literally, so that I got it. Now I know. This is
I'm sure something will strike a chord with you.
Yeah, that's true. That is a little bit of a dilemma, how you work them in. But you can't not work them in. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So here's my one small grievance about Philly hoops. Every story, every gamer from the Palestra can't be about the building, and it seems like too many are. Why am I right, and why might I be wrong, Mike?
Well, it depends on who's writing them. Like, if you come in from the outside once, it is about the building.
Okay.
You'd be wrong not to write about the building. And sometimes it's not always like, I remember North Carolina came in.
I remember that game.
Yeah, Tyler Hansborough was it reminds me of my high school gym. You know, yeah. I think people were trying to tee him up for, like, this is the coolest place ever. He's like, yeah, it's a nice little gym. It's like my high school, you know, which is funny. But all these coaches, they come in. It's just such a natural story.
Right.
You know, whether it's Popovich or Roy Williams or Izzo, you know, a bunch of them schedule the game so they can do it. And sometimes, like I mentioned Pop, because he would bring his team, you know, he'd bring Spurs over to practice the blustering because he wanted to be inside the blustering. He wanted to walk the halls and be in the crummy locker rooms and things
that's
like
that.
That's
a very Popovich thing to do. Yeah, that's, well, yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all that he would do something like that just to...
But I had to, the flip side of what you're saying, Gordy, like if I did that, it's like, Jetson, Jesus Christ. And honestly, to your point, the press conference, I'd be like, sometimes, like, are we going to ask the same goddamn questions
every
time?
That's what I mean.
Where it's just like, hey, yeah, the Big Five is tough and gritty, and you feel the rivalries, and, you know, some out-of-town freshman was like, you know, I hadn't heard of the Big Five, but yeah, it's cool. So, yeah, I know what you're saying. But
it writes itself.
We are the most proudly parochial city in the history of North America. You know, I think they're, you know, probably Siena in Italy can say, oh, you want to hear parochial?
Yeah, well, that's true. That's a good point.
People haven't left their little district in their lifetime. Okay, you got us, but in North America, that's who we are, you know? And college basketball is weird in the sense that everyone, you know, okay, bad half and Eagles, they're getting booed off the field, they know it. It's part of it. That is not. Then there's this gauze of nostalgia over college hoops, which is interesting. And their own fan bases aren't necessarily that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kyle Neptune was saying, "Hey, I take a little less, you know, I'm entitlement's the wrong word, but you guys see it at Penn State all the time. People are tough. That's what it's going to be. They're going to be tough. They're going to watch. They're going to be tough." It should be tough, but overall in the landscape, not as tough. You get ignored as opposed to, sports radio isn't on you all the time. Our columnists aren't saying, you know, what the hell is he doing now?
Yeah, right.
Sometimes that's better than being ignored. Being ignored is bad. Interesting city that way.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we're glad that we don't have to talk you in off the ledge, Mike. Retirement. Sounds like you're doing great. And man, I'm really looking forward to this book.
Lunch. I was very good.
So well, what is the timeline as far as the book is concerned? When do you think it might be coming out?
Well, I don't know you tell me if this sounds about right or wrong, because you've done this a lot, Gordy. I have it in my mind 2024 as getting all the reporting done.
Yeah.
And then I was sort of thinking 2025 writing, but I'm also realizing Silski's written some really good
and
books.
And he's writing another good one, it looks like, about the dunk, which...
Yeah, 1,000%. And it's clearly when he has something, he writes it. And that's why those things that I talked to you about, Bob Morris and T. Barham, they're fresh in my mind. I realized, don't wait a year to, you can then fine tune it, write it, see how it fits, switch it. But
yeah, that's probably right.
Right as you go along.
I think that's, with a book like this, especially where you're kind of jumping around, I think that's probably a wise thing, you know?
Especially because of that. I mean, it's not one of these things where I have to go start to finish, where in a story, I don't, you know, how do you write the 12th graph to the 12th chapter if you don't know the first chapter? This isn't that.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think that's wise.
So you know, tonight, talking to a very interested publisher locally, you know, this isn't going to be, you know, a big national book. I'm very realistic. I know the book business is tough, but I'm excited about it. So I'm thinking, you know, if it comes out late 2025, something like that.
Like in time for the season, in time for the 25-26 season or something like that. That would probably be about right, don't you think?
Yeah, that would be about right because I don't want to I want to write obviously the best book I can, and I want to use this time. I don't want to rush through and then say, okay, now what?
Yeah.
By the way, I hated writing that book.
Well, speaking of Sielski, he's writing this book about the slam dunk, and he every now and then he'll post excerpts online. He posted one the other day about Julius and Kareem, which I thought was just brilliant.
And
yeah, wasn't it? And several months ago, I was semi-lobbying with him that he has to have something in there about Mo Cheeks' dunk at the end of the 83 finals, which, as Mike has told me, I believe is the greatest moment in humankind, but I'm not sure that's going to get through.
Yeah, I've told him what he believes. That's what happened, yeah.
No, you did say that, though. You said that.
No, there's no question about it. It's self-evident. Yeah. It's, it's the greatest moment in human
In human history. Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. And I will not be swayed from that point.
Okay. I'm not trying to sway. Yeah. Anyway,
he's willing to quote you to that fact, word for words for you.
Yeah.
Then I think it blocks the book.
Yeah. So I'll keep on lobbying with Mike, and maybe I'll get somewhere. But I'm having my doubts.
All right. Yeah, right. Hey, Mike, we really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you,
man.
Mike.
Thanks for being well.
Oh, thank you both for having me.
And good luck with it.
Enjoy retirement, if that's the right word. It's not, I guess, but enjoy what you're doing, and we're really looking forward to that book.
Yeah, likewise.
Thanks.
All right, be well.
I'm going to use the word graduation. I like that word better.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. I like that. All right, take care. Good luck, Mike.
Yeah. Thank you.
Take care. Be well.
Take care.
Bye. Mike Jensen.
God love the guy.
He's one of those people that if your seat was next to his for a basketball game, that was a good night. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. What a nice guy. Yeah, what a nice guy. What a gentleman. Yeah. Somewhat similar to Joe Giuliano just as a human being, you know. Sensibility and personality, just a really good guy. I was thinking of, he and I got caught. We were covering Penn State at the Big House, and we got caught in the crowd, and we got moved where we shouldn't have gotten moved, and we're trying to get to that big tunnel on the other side of the stadium.
Lovely. Yes, I know what you mean.
And we were going in front of all these people who were taking selfies, and we were getting in the middle of their selfies, and they were like, "Whoa, what are you?" You know,
that thing. Yeah.
It was this crazy thing, and I don't know, I associate Mike with that for some reason.
Because that is a weird setup, that tunnel is like right in the middle of the, it comes out on the 50-yard
and
line.
And both teams come out there.
Yes.
Which has led to some controversy.
Yes, I remember years and years ago, Tyrone Wheatley apparently shoved Jeff Nelson, the then SID.
Oh, my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
For what reason? Just because he was there, I guess. Whatever. But, that always struck me as an odd configuration.
Yeah, and a couple of years ago, Ohio State and Michigan players actually got at it in the tunnel.
How could you not?
Right. How could you not? And then I remember Franklin said something about, well, why can't you just, like, one team goes off the field and then the other team, why? This is a solvable problem. And then, like, Carbaugh seemed to get mad at Franklin and said something.
That's bizarre to me. I don't know why it's like that, because you're going to have that shit. It's going to happen.
It's inevitable. Yeah.
Think about it. Yeah.
I mean, they're literally rubbing shoulders at each other.
It's not a good thing to have happen before a game of that magnitude. But anyway, you touched on the Big Five Classic. This is the inaugural Big Five Classic. Yeah. As you also touched on, Temple is going to play St. Joe's on Saturday at the Wells Fargo Center. Temple beat LaSalle last night in triple overtime.
OT, yeah.
And St. Joe's took down Nova. And Nova's actually in the fifth place game against Drexel. Yeah. You wouldn't expect that.
Really. And I've seen Nova play a couple times, a little bit this year. And they played great. It was when I was in Detroit, I was watching. Who were they playing? It was somebody. Was it Memphis?
Maybe.
And they were running them out of the place.
It's weird, isn't it?
They have a chance to be pretty good. And this guy, who I remember from high school, from Abington High School, Eric Dixon,
right?
Who has it seems like he's been in college for 9 years, and he didn't do much his first few years. He was like the 6A player of the year.
Okay.
In Pennsylvania, and he's a big, wide, almost a Zion body type. Not as athletic as Zion, but he's a power player, and he's really good. He's the guard whose name escaped Moore, yeah. Justin Moore, who Mike mentioned, is also an excellent player, And they look like they're really connected. They're
6-2 with victories over North Carolina and Memphis, as you mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
But they've also lost to Penn and St. Joe's.
So. Yeah, Penn beat them.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying about the Big Five. I think the floor is high, the highest it's been for a long time. The South's pretty good. Temple's pretty good. St. Joe's looks like their best team in 10 years.
And it's like what Mike was saying, the worst thing in Philly is to be ignored. And I think about some of these teams, like LaSalle Hoops. Yeah. You know, who's talked about them since Lionel Simmons was there?
They are being coached by Fran Dunphy. And I'm so glad that the Brickus kid from Coatesville was turning out to be a very good college player because he was coached by Fred Thompson.
How about that?
That's how I kind of interviewed the kid and everything. I went down there to do an interview. They went to the state semis and lost to the school out near Erie, the little school that had all these monster players.
Not Cathedral Prep.
No, the guy that was at Kentucky last year. Like, led the country in rebounding, big power forward.
Oh, I know who you mean.
Yeah, I can't think of his name either. But they lost to that school.
Okay.
Who went on to win it. Anyway, I actually was at that game. I covered that. I didn't cover it, but I just went to it. It was at Williamsport. But anyway, I'm babbling, sorry.
No,
but
sorry.
The Big Ten is, or the Big Five is pretty good.
That's
good to see.
Yeah, I agree with that. This is something that Mike also touched on about Deion Sanders is SI's, and granted there's a lot of things about SI that have come out to be unsavory within the last week.
Yeah.
But this is just icing on the cake. They named him Deion Sanders as their Sportsman of the Year, and he coached a 4-8 team this year at Colorado, when did they decide on this? Like three games into the season?
Yeah, that's what you wonder. That's the first thing I wondered. Did they figure this out after they beat TCU week one?
Let's do this. Or is it just to do exactly what they're doing, inspire, you know, conversation that...
Well, that's an element of it. That's always an element of it. I used to think SI was really pretty serious about that award. Steph Curry won it last year.
I can't argue with that.
Which makes sense, coming off a year when they won the whole thing the year before. I don't know. Now, supposedly the angle of the story, SI's story, is that he revitalized a community. Deion revitalized a community. And it's Boulder, Colorado. It's not exactly like the Rust Belt, you know? I'm not sure that needed revitalizing, but whatever.
It's a sizable stretch from where I'm sitting. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I can't, like, name an amazing candidate off the top of my head. I have to think about it from this past year as far as Sportsman of the Year. I mean, you could, but there's got to be somebody better than that, I would think.
Yeah, and you know, a guy like Ohtani, if he had not gotten injured, maybe the injury had, you know, caused a problem there with that. Jokic.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a pretty good one, I think.
I don't know. You know. Yeah, so anyway. Jalen Hurts.
Jalen Hurts wouldn't be terrible.
No.
Patrick Mahomes wouldn't be
terrible. Never. Never a bad choice.
Yeah,
but at any rate.
Yeah.
But we move on to other topics, and one of them is that Penn State is reportedly going to hire Kansas offensive coordinator Andy Kotelnicki. Maybe I'm pronouncing that wrong.
I'm certain you're pronouncing it wrong, but I don't know how to pronounce it either.
But at any rate, he's going to be their new offensive coordinator. Is this the sixth offensive coordinator under Franklin? Do I have that right?
I believe that's correct, yeah.
So what have you heard about this gentleman?
Well, he's from Kansas, and Kansas has been good the last couple of years since they hired a guy named Lance Leopold as the head coach, who was did a tremendous job at the University of Buffalo, which was barely Division One, and he really made them pretty good. And he's made Kansas pretty good. And this guy was with him at Buffalo.
Okay.
He's been around a little bit.
Uh-huh.
He has no ties to the Big Ten that I'm aware of. He has no ties to this part of the country that I'm aware of. But he does have a good resume. And it looks like, from what I've been able to read and figure, that Leopold really is letting him. It's not Leopold's offense, and he's kind of the caretaker. Mm. It's his offense. And here's what's interesting about it. It's apparently it's very complicated.
Oh,
it's a lot of and because it seems like in all of these thinly veiled shots of Yersich that Franklin has made in the media the last couple months, even one of the things that seemed to come through is he thought things were too complicated,
and now he's going to get more complicated.
Well, yeah, and I mean that's a simplistic read on it, just off the top of my head, but. This guy supposedly, a lot of formations, a lot of motion, mm-hmm. a lot of things to disguise what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
He's worked with a lot of mobile quarterbacks,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Which Aller is not.
Which Aller is not. I don't know how much that, a lot of people brought that up as a caution flag about Joe Moorhead, but I disagree with that. I think Joe Moorhead would have had no problem with that at all. He worked with a drop-back guy at Fordham and set all kind of offensive records.
Oh, God, yes.
He lit it up. But this guy has a good performance, good resume.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all I know. I'm going to write about him for Sunday, so I'm going to have mm-hmm. to learn more in the next few hours.
There you go. And the other bit of Penn State news is this is courtesy of a couple different outlets, including Penn Live, that the Penn State has offered a wide receiver named Jamori Macklin, who is cousin of former Eagles wide receiver Jeremy Macklin. So, I mean, obviously that's a position of need, and certainly something they would...
So is he a high school kid or a transfer portal?
He's a North Texas State receiver, so that's...
I didn't think you could offer people in the transfer portal until it sort of opens on December 2nd, so I don't know.
Yeah, but apparently he announced it.
Oh, okay.
So well, I don't know if that's going to lead to some some problems for Penn State, but apparently he announced it on social media. So
yeah, maybe I must be wrong about that. But there's a number of wide receivers who are going to be available. There's mm-hmm. a guy who bailed out on Texas A&M when Jimbo got fired,
mm-hmm.
who was a 5-star, who was like a top 10 player in the country,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure that Penn State is taking a shot at him, but, you know, so is everybody else, probably.
I would think.
That's one, and that's certainly a position. I think offensive line, too. I think they're going to have to look there.
Because they lose, I mean, notably, they're going to lose Fashanu. Fashanu's going to be a top 10 pick at worst.
Yep, yep. And they lose Norzad at the very important center position.
Yeah.
So they do have, and I don't think they have answers on the current roster there that are going to be they're not going to be, you know, they're not going to be as good as Fashanu for sure, but even to just stay at roughly the same level as a unit, I think.
Well, that's not encouraging for next fall.
Oh, my God, yeah, I know. And think about what they're going to lose on defense, too. I remember looking at this two-year window and thinking 24, when Aller's a veteran and the running backs have all been there for a while, maybe that's the year, but... you look at it now, and they got a lot of holes to fill, and we'll find out. Maybe they have more than we even think when you find out in the next couple of weeks about guys that are turning pro early or even transferring out. Maybe mm-hmm. I don't know.
That was an interesting thing after the final game against Michigan State, where Aller, you know, pledged allegiance to the program, as did Singleton, which
couldn't have been more emphatic.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which I both those things were. I mean, that was bigger news, obviously, than the game itself, which you know, was not much of a game.
It was a pummeling.
Yeah,
really a pummeling.
But I mean, in particular, in the case of Singleton, I kind of figured Aller was on for you know, the long haul. But Singleton did not have as great a year this year as he did last year, partially because Catron Allen was so good.
Yeah.
But he's on board too, apparently, unless something changes in the next several weeks.
And that's another thing about this OC hire.
Mm-hmm.
Franklin is smart enough to make sure that he's got a fit for Drew Aller. So mm-hmm. again, about the mobile quarterback thing, I really don't, I'm not too worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know that he wants a guy that Aller's going to be comfortable with and mm-hmm. that fits Aller's strengths and mm-hmm. all that.
Yeah, so we shall see how this all plays out because, you know, they've gone through a lot of guys since Moorhead was there. Moorhead was certainly still at the top of the heap as far as offensive assistants who worked under Franklin. But
And the other big issue here is Manny Diaz going to become a head coach?
Mm-hmm.
Because he has done a phenomenal job.
Oh, my God, that guy is, speaking of creativity.
Oh, man. I mean, he brings it. He just brings it. And I understand that he met with the people at Duke yesterday. Mm-hmm. There was a couple other guys who did that too, including Knowles, who is the DC at Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Remember they hired him 2 years ago from Oklahoma State because he was doing all this interesting creative stuff on defense. And so we'll see there. Does Diaz want to go to Duke? Is that I don't know.
It seems like he would be might aim higher than that. Yeah, don't you think?
That's what I think. Duke has been really good the last couple of years under this coach, who's now going to Texas A&M, which is the height of insanity in college football, and that's saying something.
Clearly,
that's just loony land. So the pressure is really going to be on him. But what I was going to say about Duke is, when I watched them play the last couple of years, I was impressed with how athletic they were.
Yeah,
how
quick.
And I mean, it's not like, they almost look like an SEC team playing in the ACC. And this guy, this Elko that just got, or what is that his name? Elko? Whatever his name is. It's going to Texas A&M. I think he's only been there for 2 years.
Yeah.
So how many of these really athletic, quick recruits are his guys?
Yeah, was that who was before him?
David Cutcliffe,
who did really well too.
Ooh,
and he was there for a little while, right?
Yeah, and he did really well there. Toward the end, it tapered a little bit.
Where did he end up?
I retired.
Oh,
yeah, he's an older guy. Yeah,
I did not realize that.
Yeah, he is. I had a long talk with him one time at the Outback. Run up to the Outback Bowl, he was...
Mike Elko, okay.
He was the offensive coordinator of Tennessee at that time. They played Tennessee.
Okay.
It was when Danny Ainge's nephew or something was the quarterback for Tennessee. Eric Ainge. Anyway.
Yeah.
And he was the OC. And he had been Peyton Manning's quarterback coach and mentor. And he talked all about... He talked about sitting in his office and looking out the window and seeing, here comes Peyton with his playbook, and we're gonna study football for the next hour, and it's going to be really, you know, it's that kind of stuff. And just a really good guy. So I always sort of followed him because I thought he was such a cool guy. And he had a good run, but maybe he was doing a lot of the recruiting that this guy's benefiting from. I don't know.
That seems to happen a lot.
That's a simplistic read, but yeah.
Yeah. So that is interesting that you made that observation about Duke football, because for a long time it was terribly downtrodden.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is, their quarterback, who was a pretty good player, and he got hurt, and that hurt him. That hurt their season. He's in the portal now.
Huh.
Yeah, I think he just announced that yesterday that he's transferred.
Isn't that interesting?
So maybe Duke is suddenly a basketball school again.
I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah.
The other bit of news, Mike Sauerbaugh, Donegal graduate who's been a guest on our podcast, and for a long, long time in the Cleveland organization as a minor league coach and manager and then a major league coach, just recently got hired as the third base coach with the Mets. So
yeah, I'm glad he landed on his feet.
I am too.
Yeah,
he's one of the all-time good guys. He really is.
It maybe looks at this point like being a major league manager maybe isn't going to happen.
Yeah, I thought it might happen there.
Yeah.
You know, but it didn't, sadly.
But anyway, you know, he continues to work in baseball, which is obviously what he wants to do, and he's in the big leagues, and which is where you want to be.
Yeah.
Former After the Buzzer guest, which is also where you want to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. Always.
All right.
So, I think we've reached the end of our journey for this week, speaking of which.
Yeah, right. So, next week, high school basketball gets a warm welcome back, and
Indeed.
We're going to be joined by Andy Hur of LLHoops.com, who...
He's the guy. He watches these guys fully engaged.
He's into it. So we'll start getting into that next week. That's it. Thanks again to Mike Jensen, and he's Gordy. I'm Mike. See ya.
See ya later.